Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here, and thank you also for putting together a day on ecosystems at the Collège de France. I think it's really great that this topic is being represented here, so thanks for that. So yeah, I'm going to be talking about understanding the biological diversity of ecosystems, and as we said, ecosystems are at threat today, and there's this desire maybe to be able to predict how ecosystems are going to answer, how they're going to evolve under the current crisis. Yet, we still know very little about even how the diversity of ecosystem is being generated and maintained. So this is really still striking to me, how little we know about it, and even how very different views we can have about how diversity is generated. So if we think even in areas of evolutionary biology where we think about these questions, there's very different ways to see how diversity might change through time, through millions of years of evolution. So here we have mock pictures of very simplified way that we can view evolution and how diversity evolves through time. On the left, that could be the view that an evolutionary biologist working with phylogeny might have, where we have diversity accumulating kind of exponentially through time. And in this case, if we think about what controls or what drives species richness today, how we can explain species richness today, what is going to be the most important is the speed at which species accumulate through time and the time since clades starting diversifying. And if we look at the middle view, that might be the view of how diversity changed through time that a lot of paleobiologists might have in mind, people working with fossils, where we have this waxing and waning of clades, and so diversity of some clades might accumulate through time, and then we have a decline in the diversity of this clade when another clade take over, and there's a competition going on between different clades, and some that are that were adapted to their environment, that are no longer adapted to their environment, and where the diversity goes down. Finally, on the very right, we can have yet another view of how diversity changes through time, where we're going to have initially an increase in diversity in some clades until they reach sort of a carrying capacity, where all the niches that are available for this given group of species are filled, and there's going to be kind of equilibrium diversity, where in this case, what explains diversity today is more the carrying capacity that can be sustained by a given area or given ecosystem. And when we saw, for example, this morning, the talk about explaining diversity in planktonic organisms, so Chris presented ways to look at diversity and how it might be controlled by environmental factors such as temperature and so on. And this is really this view that in this case we can explain diversity by current environmental variables. And it's an approach that a lot of macroecologists have, where then diversity is explained by current abiotic variables. So very different ways to look at how diversity changes through time, and really, we don't have a clear understanding of which of these scenarios are going on, or which one is the most likely to occur in nature or in different clades. However, one way we can think about it that can kind of unify these different views is that regardless of the scenario that we have, what explains species richness in a given clade, at a given place, in a given time, is really the product of speciation and extinction events, and also dispersal events, if we think in a geographical context. And so if we have a way to get at estimates of the speed at which species are generated, and at the speed at which they go extinct, and the speed or the rate at which they move from one area to another area, and how these rates change through time, we can kind of unify these different views and try to have an understanding of how of what explains the level of species richness that we see today. It's not an easy task. This can be done using fossil data, or it can alternatively be done, and that's the approach that we have in my group, using phylogenetic approaches. So this is a general approach, and there's a lot of different models that can be used that we can think about. It's really like this idea of having an imaginary vision of how evolution might proceed and then putting it into a conceptual model and then having an inference tool that allows to fit this model to empirical data. In this case, the type of models we have are stochastic birth death models, where we represent the speciation and extinction events by simple, you know, birth of lineages or death of lineages. So this is the process that we see on the left. And now we're going to try to infer back this process that went on evolutionary time from a reconstructed phylogeny that we can observe today. So from DNA data that we can collect in present-day species, and using their molecular data, we can reconstruct phylogeny. We end up having a dated tree, so here I will assume that this tree, we can rely upon the reconstruction of this tree, and we have a pretty good understanding of when the splitting events happened in the phylogeny, and then we can develop inference tools such as maximum likelihood or Bayesian inference tools that allow us to fit these models that we have thought about to the empirical data that we collect, so empirical phylogenies. And from that, what we can do is then compare the likelihood of different scenarios of evolution and estimate rates of evolution, such as rates of speciation, extinction, and so on. So these rates that control how diversity changes through time. So to give an example of application of these types of models, this is a question that we already heard about, what explains the light null diversity gradient, the fact that we see a concentration of species in the tropics with mammals as a case study. So here, the data we have in hand is a phylogeny of all mammalian species on Earth, and also data on their current distribution. So we know the current distribution of mammalian species, whether they occur in the tropics, in temporal regions, or in both regions. And now what we can do is put together a model where we're going to represent, where we're going to be able to test if species present in area A, let's say the tropics, or area B, the temperate regions, have speciation and extinction rates that are equivalent or are different. So, you know, are species in the tropics, do they speciate faster? Do they experience lower rates of extinction? Is there more dispersal from temperate regions to the tropics and so on? So here we have this model where we have rates of speciation and extinction associated to each area, and we also have a rate SAB, which corresponds to the speciation of widespread species present in both the tropics and temperate regions by biome divergence. So now, we are able to compute the likelihood of data with the tree of a species and their current location, we can adjust the model to the data and estimate those different rates. So this is the result of what this gives us if we estimate rates of speciation in the tropics versus temperate region at the whole mammalian scale. What we see is that we find that there's both higher speciation in the tropics compared to temperate regions, so the tropics scene has kind of a cradle of diversity, and lower extinction rates in the tropics. So this is more of a hypothesis of a museum, so we see that we have the two processes going on, both a higher speciation rate and a lower extinction rate in the tropics, and which leads to a higher net diversification rate in the tropics. And we also find that there's a more frequent dispersal from the tropics to the temperate region than the other way around. So the tropics act as kind of a pump of diversity, where diversity is being generated and dispersed into temperate regions. So this is what happens at the global mammalian scale. If we look across families, we find the same pattern repeated across families. There were two exceptions that are not there, it's Carnivora and Lagomorpha, and we can explain in this case, the differences. But maybe like the take-home message from this example is just to show that estimating diversification rates is key to understanding the diversity of ecosystems. So here we see that if we try to understand why there are more species in the tropics and we don't account for the historical effects of speciation and extinction, we're missing a big part of the story. However, getting at estimates of these diversification rates is not easy, and what makes it difficult is that we only have data that we observe today, and that they are really heterogeneous. So those are results that people have found by applying the type of models that I told you about to empirical phylogenies and general trends that we can find when we fit these models. So there's a general trend that is found is that speciation rates tend to decline through time. So this is something that is found over and over again in different clades. It's also something that looking at a lot of phylogenies covering mammals, birds, fungi, and plants, and so on, amphibians. So here we see, like on the right, the number of phylogenies that were best supported by a model, where we see that rates of diversification vary through time. It's a huge support for these models, and in general, rates decline through time. The explanation that is given for this general trend of decline in speciation rate through time is the idea that there are some diversity-dependent effects, whereby when we have a lot of niches that are being filled by species who diversified into these niches, it's more difficult to generate new species, and so there's this gradual slowdown in diversification that goes on as an adaptive radiation proceeds. So this is a totally like a plausible explanation for why we see these recurrent slowdowns in diversification rates. However, we thought that it could be interesting to think about alternative explanations because, you know, it's there's not that much. Support, except that we see this decline in speciation rates and we have a hard time explaining why they are so widespread across phylogenies, but there we can think about other explanations. So for example, where we have a variation in environmental variables, here it's a change in the geology, we can think that initially there's going to be this burst of speciation that is linked to different mountains driving like different types of adaptation and speciation into different geographic regions, but slowly has this there's no like generation of new areas where to speciate. There's a slowdown in speciation rates. And so we thought about different types of scenarios that can explain slowdowns in diversification. And the other thing we did also is to try to see is if the different verbal arguments we can have on how or the processes that can drive slowdown in diversification rates, whether they can actually occur if we simulate realistic scenarios of how diversification proceeds. So this is linked to the fact that in adaptive radiation theory, there's been a lot of verbal arguments, but they're not really backed up by theoretical models. And so here, what we decided to do is to build up a simulation model where we represent in a very simplified way adaptive radiations. And we place ourselves in a degree of modeling where we're not at the individual level and where it's really hard to model speciation events, but we're not either at the lineage level where then it's hard to model what happens when we have intraspecific competition going on, but we are at an intermediate level where we see lineages diversifying, but there is this stage where that we call incipient speciation, where divergence starts happening, and we have a divergence between two populations where intraspecific competition can go on, but we don't model what happens like within these populations, and we have a modeling that is at the scale of lineages that can be either true species or incipient species. And there we model the phenomenon of character displacement, whereby when species are phenotypically similar, they're going to displace one another in the phenotypic space. So Xi here is the trait value of a given lineage. And we see how it evolves through time, how we model how it evolves through time is through a term that is going to create a repulsion of lineages in phenotypic space, and then we have this stochastic displacement that is, that models drift, neutral drift. And by modeling this with like this, we can modulate this alpha parameter, which controls the strength of interaction. So when we have an alpha of zero, we have a simple model of drift. So traits evolve as a Brownian motion process. And as alpha increases, we're going to have more repulsion in phenotypic space. So species that get close in phenotypic space are going to be strongly repulsed. Now, the second effect of competition through character displacement is to speed speciation. So we cannot have, at least in a symmetric speciation, we cannot have species that speciate unless they are differentiated phenotypically. So here we have the rate of initiation of speciation, and we have a second rate, which is the speciation completion rate that is going to increase with the phenotypic distance between species. So species are going to complete speciation, so they're going to stop hybridizing and having gene flow and so on when phenotypes are sufficiently distinct from one another. And finally, we have an effect of competition on extinction, so that mimics the effect of competitive exclusion. So when species get too close in phenotypic space, one of them is going to be competitively excluded, and by this way we have competition acting on the rates of extinction. So now we can simulate this model, and we can test different things that I'm not going to show all of them here, but just in this case, on this question of is it plausible that through competition and the saturation of niche space, we can see a decline in diversification rate. So here you see in brown the case without competition, where we don't have a decline in net diversification rate through time, so the speed of speciation stays the same. And as competition increases, when we go to darker blue values, we see that net diversification rates start to decline through time. And so this then shows that, okay, it makes sense that by modeling competition within a clade, we can obtain decline in diversification rates. And what was surprising to us is that this makes sense if we are in a trait space that is bounded. At some point, we have really a saturation of niche space, and it's really it's not possible to have new species being generated there. But it also occurs in cases where the space is unbounded, and this is, you know, when a case that is more biologically realistic. And what happens there is that even though there's the species that are close to the boundary of what is already occupied, they can still expand in phenotypic space, but the pressure the occupation of niches in the interior of a phenotypic space that is already occupied, it puts a limit to the rate at which new species can be generated. So we can, by simulating these models, find this decline in net diversification rates even in cases where trait space is not bounded. Now we wanted to, as I said, to explore other potential reasons why we see these slowdowns in diversification rates. And an alternative explanation that we came up with that we thought could make a lot of sense is that these slowdowns come from a temperature effect. So the effect of climate cooling during the Cenozoic. So this is the temperature curve during the 70 last million years. There's been a cooling of the climate along the Cenozoic. And it's usually thought that there can be a positive association between speciation rates and temperature, and there's a lot of reasons for this, in particular, for example, through metabolic effects. But it's also like comes from observation of correlations of standing diversity with current current temperature and so on. And so if there is indeed a positive effect of temperature on the rate at which new species are generated, and there is this slowdown, this cooling down of temperature in the Cenozoic, then this could generate a slowdown in diversification rates through time. So to test this hypothesis, we developed models where the rates of speciation and extinction can depend on measured environmental variables. For example, temperature. We tested through simulations how well we can recover the parameters of such a model, if we can distinguish model where there is such a dependency to models where there isn't a dependency. And there's a decent statistical power of these models to distinguish when there is an impact of a measured environmental variable on diversification rates. And so then we use these models to test this hypothesis that rates of diversification can be influenced by temperature variation on a bunch of phylogenies across tetraprods, so more than 200 phylogenies across tetraprods, and we compare the variety of models, so models where we have constant rates of diversification, models where the rates vary through time but we don't really know why, models where there's diversity dependent effects, so this idea that rates slow down because there is a saturation of niche space, and how temperature-dependent models with different possible ways that temperature can, or functional forms in which temperature can influence diversification rates. What we found first is that this general pattern of slowdown in diversification rates, we found it again. So here we see the number of phylogenies that support decreasing speciation rate through time compared to increasing in green and constant rates. So there's a lot of phylogenies where we detect this slowdown in diversification rates through time. And when we look at the comparison of different models, the temperature-dependent models are the ones that are the most often supported. We see that diversity dependence is also supported in some cases, but in much less of the phylogenies. And when there is such a dependency of speciation rates on temperature, the dependency is positive. So the hypothesis we had that higher temperature could speed up speciation rates. So I have to say that, okay, this kind of gives some support that climate cooling could really provide an alternative explanation for speciation rate slowdowns. And here we see that when we compared this hypothesis to the diversity-dependent hypothesis of adaptive radiations, we found more phylogenies where temperature dependence was supported. However, I want to say that the difference in support, in statistical support of these models, is really small. So it's not a huge statistical support. And this kind of stress of the limits of these modeling approaches, where we compare different scenarios, and sometimes we have different scenarios that are almost equally likely. Another example of application of these models where we test the effect of past environmental changes on rates of diversification. This is an application using the Terra Ocean data that Chris presented this morning. For the first time, having these types of data allows to put together large-scale phylogenies where we think that we cover a big part of the whole diversity of a group. So here, the diatoms. Of course, the genes that are sequenced during these types of expeditions are really short and not that robust to construct a super robust phylogenetic tree. So what we did here is to first build a backbone phylogeny based on much more genes for reference diatoms that have been sequenced with much more sequence lengths and so on, and genes and so on. And then we grafted data from the Tara Ocean on these robust phylogeny. So we obtained these 20,000 OTUs phylogenies on which we can apply our diversification models. The first thing we did was to see, to test whether there has been changes in diversification rates through time. So here we fit a model where we try to find times in history where there's been a change in diversification rates. Here you see that what we found was evidence for an increase in diversification rates about 50 million years ago, and 40 million years ago, and this corresponds to the time of transition from a greenhouse to a cold house Earth, and also to the opening of the Drake Passage, which for other reasons has been thought to be important for diatom diversification. So what we did next is that we wanted to maybe have a more refined understanding of how environmental variables can affect diversification, but what has been possible with a fossil record where we look at diatoms as a whole group. Here, what we can do is apply diversification models in different parts of the phylogeny. So we split the phylogeny between one phylogeny that goes from the origin of diatoms to minus 40 million years ago, and then all the other phylogenies from 40 million years ago to the present. And then we tested for the effect of a variety of abiotic and biotic variables. So abiotic included CO2 concentration, carbon concentration, temperature, level of silica in the ocean, sea level. And the biotic variables were taken from fossil data, so it's diversity curves obtained from the fossil record. And we showed again before with simulations that we can detect the effect of these different variables on rates of diversification on phylogenies. And so what we found now on the phylogeny preceding the 40 million years ago, so when this shift in diversification in diatoms occurred, is a support for the effect of CO2 on diatom diversification with a negative effect of CO2 concentration on speciation rates. That results in a negative effect on net diversification rate. And yeah, there's different possible explanations for that. One has to do with seeing diatoms more as the drive of a decline in CO2. As Chris said, they are diatoms can, take CO2 out of the atmosphere and sink it in the ocean. So diatoms can really be the drive of a decline in CO2. Or the other way around, CO2, when there's been a decline in CO2, there's also this time where a temperature or and the temperature in the ocean went down. It was a cooling down and perturbation of the oceans and the circulation of the oceans that is thought to be positive or to drive diversification in diatoms. Now, in those are represent the results for different phylogenies going from 40 million years ago to the present. And what we see here, so is the cases where we see so the phylogenies for which the best supported model was a model where there is a support for an effect of CO2, carbon, silica, sea level, and so on. And then whether the dependency in this group was positive or negative. So what we see here is a very big heterogeneity in the response of different diatom groups to different biotic or abiotic variables, with 50% of the clades influenced primarily by biotic factors, 40% primarily by abiotic factors, and 10% that come in the class of models of time dependency, so probably factors that we didn't account for in this study. So huge heterogeneity in the response of different groups of diatoms to different environmental variables that tend to show that in order to understand diversification rates in different groups, we need to understand how species ecology interacts with the environment to shape the speed at which species are generated or go extinct. So as I said, estimating diversification rates is important, it's challenging, as we saw, it can change the trends, can depend on the group, The effect of different environmental variables can depend on the species ecology, and there's another level of heterogeneity that comes from the heterogeneity in rates that we see across lineages. So different groups of organisms can have very different diversification rates. Here what we see is an estimate of a shift in diversification rates during the evolution of jaw vertebrates, and we see the cases in yellow that are seven main shifts in diversification, where there's been an increase in diversification rates that led to high diversity. Another example on the right, where we were able to show that there's been significant variation in diversification rates in different groups of cetaceans, so at more narrow taxonomic scales. So one of this is something that's really interesting for evolution biologists to know, like the rates at which species diversify to explain current day diversity. And so far, the models we have used to do that are models that really have behind the idea of key innovation, which is displayed a little bit on the right, where the idea is that we have clades where we're going to consider that rates are homogeneous, and at some point in history there is a shift in diversification rate that is going to apply to the whole clade, to the whole descendant clade, and all the models that have been designed so far to infer rates of diversification and how they vary through evolutionary history have this idea of key innovation driving major changes. What we did recently is to try to see what happens if we model variations in diversification rates in a much more subtle way, more in the way that it's done in molecular evolution, where we can have relaxed clock models where the rates can vary at each branch on a phylogeny. So here, the model we have is a model where we are going to assume that at each speciation event there is a variation in diversification rate, and this variation is parametrized by a log normal distribution that is parametrized by the parental rate with a potential trend. So we can either have a decrease in speciation rate or an increase in speciation rate, and then a stochastic component. And we can compute likelihoods associated with these models and then fit it to phylogenies using MCMC. And we can estimate the hyperparameters of these models, so the initial rate of speciation, the trend alpha, the stochasticity, which measures how much the rates are heritable or not. And we can estimate all the parameters of the model, which are the speciation rates for each branch in the phylogeny. So in the end, if we have a phylogenetic tree, we can, so here we have a simulation of a process and the inference of a process, so we can show that we can more or less see where there have been increase in diversification rates and where there has been decrease in speciation rates. So the model smooths a little bit the difference, but we can have a pretty good estimate of how these rates varied on the phylogeny. To give an example, then once we have an empirical phylogeny and we can fit our model, what it gives us is an estimate of all the rates of speciation for each lineage. And this then can be used, for example, to try to see if there's correlates between these rates and different ecologies of a species or different environments in which they live or all the types of factors that we think can affect diversification rates. So those are two very contrasting examples, one where rates don't vary so much, there's not that much variation within the clade in diversification rates, and on the opposite, another clade where there's much more variation. And for example, in this clade, what we see here, where we have
a plot of the distribution of diversification rates estimated on each of the different plates. The one like the Oaks and the Hallies, the one I showed just before, has almost as much as heterogeneity in diversification rate that what we can find in the whole group of birds, which is in fact dark on the plot. So there's a substantial variation in diversification rates for many clades. This is something that we don't see when we model variation in rates with shifts that corresponds to key innovations, and that we can estimate much more better by having this smooth representation of how rates change across phylogenies. So yeah, I've tried to show is that diversification rates vary in time, they vary across lineages, and we still have a pretty limited understanding of the relative role of various intrinsic and extrinsic factors, abiotic and abiotic factors that drive this variation in diversification rates. So there's still quite a lot of work to do, even in terms of building the models to better understand what controls these diversification rates. And this is fundamental for our understanding of how the diversity of ecosystems is generated and maintained. Something that is quite important for us in my group is that we develop all these tools that allow us to better understand diversification rates, and we make them freely available to the evolutionary biology community. So we have these packages available in R and on GitHub that are accessible and are used by evolutionary biologists to estimate rates of diversification. So with that, I want to thank you and thank all the people doing the work.